Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, three-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From Odyssey, I'm Lauren Berry, and this is the On Deadline podcast, where you get a deeper dive into stories from our radio newsrooms across the country. Today on Deadline is looking at the vow that President-elect Donald Trump made on the campaign trail when he said he would end the Russian invasion of Ukraine upon his return to the White House. It's been almost 3 years since the start of the Ukraine war, which Russia began in February 2022 when it started its special military operation. Since the war began, 43,000 Ukrainian soldiers have been killed. And 370,000 have been injured, according to Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. And on the other side, more than 600,000 Russian soldiers have been killed or wounded, according to Russian military officials. Though that number might be even higher. Ukrainian Commander-in-Chief Oleksandr Syrsky recently reported that Russia suffered an estimated 427,000 wounded and killed in 2024 alone. On top of that number, Russia has been receiving support from its new ally, North Korea. South Korea reports that among the troops North Korea sent, more than 1,000 casualties have already been reported. So what will happen now that Trump is set to return to office this month? During an interview with Russian state-run media outlet TASS, Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov discussed a proposal for peace with Ukraine that was brought forth by President-elect Donald Trump's allies. While it wasn't an official proposal, Lavrov shared that Russia would not accept the deals that were being reported. We are not happy, of course, with the proposals made by members of the Trump team to postpone Ukraine's admission to NATO for 20 years and to station British and European peacemaking forces in Ukraine. That's what Lavrov said about the reported Trump proposals. So, will Russia be as willing to come to the table as Trump makes it seem? Ryan Schmelz, a Fox News Radio Washington correspondent, recently shared more on Russia's willingness to work with the Trump administration.
Well, so what is Russia's foreign minister saying about these so-called negotiations?
Well, the foreign minister has said he's willing to speak with the United States and having a dialogue with the incoming Trump administration. But he says that, you know, the Trump administration has to make the first move, which is kind of baffling to me to hear him say that, because it seems like the Trump administration has been, you know, kind of saying all along that they want to have a sit down conversation and try to negotiate something the minute they take office. And I think you kind of see that in the Trump administration's early moves by establishing a special envoy specifically to deal with ending the war in Ukraine between Russia and Ukraine, with Keith Kellogg taking that position over.
Yeah, I don't know where this goes. The concern, as the talking head there on MSNBC seemed to have, is that Zelensky will be sort of an afterthought. This will be a negotiation between Trump and Putin, and somehow Zelensky gets clipped out of it or kind of overshadowed.
Yeah. Yeah, and I haven't heard any indication that he would get clipped out of it. I mean, I think the intention is for Ukraine to be involved in this just as much as the United States and Russia is. I think it's more so the United States probably going to have more of a hardline approach and more of a hardline involvement in this, maybe compared to where it is right now. I think if there's anybody who might get cut out of it, it would probably be some of the NATO countries that could be involved. And Trump might, you know, might not really take their opinion as golden as Biden did. And so I think that's probably the one that might be less involved with this. It might be more of a direct conversation between Russia, Ukraine, and the United States. But again, we still don't know what that's going to look like just yet.
Yeah. Well, I mean, The whole thing is that the Biden campaign and then the Harris campaign both suggested that all Trump wants to do is settle it no matter what, and that means it's going to hurt Ukraine. What are we, 2.5 years into this thing now? Is it 2.5?
Yeah.
We just passed the 2-year point. I know. I don't know if anybody was expecting an outright winner one direction or another, which means all you've got left is some sort of a settlement, right?
Yeah, well, I think we were all worried that Ukraine was going to fall within a month after they were invaded, yet they're still here 2 years later. So even to get to this point in many ways could be considered a victory for Ukraine. So I think, you know, what's interesting, Mark, is, you know, I've had some people, and I've kind of said this out loud, too, where this might be the issue where the Trump campaign had its best messaging, which was that they messaged on ending the war in Ukraine. And you see the Republican Party right now, they're very divided on this issue. There are some who are very gung-ho about giving Ukraine more weapons, more resources, more money, and there are others who are very skeptical of that. But when President-elect Trump messaged on ending the war in Ukraine, that gave both wings of the party a message to unify around, and they were able to capitalize on that.
We all know that Trump has said that he'll be able to end the war in Ukraine through negotiations. However, he's not the only world leader who's focused on that task. For example, Slovakian Prime Minister Robert Fico has recently said that he'd be willing to broker peace talks. Don Jensen is a senior advisor at the U.S. Institute of Peace and a former diplomat at the U.S. Embassy in Moscow, and he recently shared some more on this with Odyssey.
But why would Slovakia's PM make this offer to Putin? Because Slovakia is a member of the EU, is it not?
It is a good question. There are actually two dramas going on here at the same time. One is that Slovakia and Hungary, which are very, very in practice pro-Putin and flirt with him all the time, if I can use that word, have gas deals that expire next week, which brings Russian natural gas from Russia across Ukraine into Slovakia and Hungary, and both countries are very, very dependent on imports of Russian gas and, frankly, have no ready alternatives because the contracts end in the middle of next week. And Zelensky in Ukraine has said, well, wait a minute. You're flirting with Putin. You support him in many ways. Why would I let you continue to profit from and benefit from Russian natural gas when he's out to destroy our country? So that's one part of it. And Orban in Hungary and Fico pretend to say they want to broker a negotiated peace in Ukraine, and that is really sort of not what they really want. They want to be in Putin's good favor. They want their natural resources still shipped in the middle of winter into Slovakia and Hungary, and that's what is behind part of that.
Interesting.
Part two, yeah, it is, but it's hard to take what they say at face value, and I will not dare to speculate the kind of private financial deal Putin struck with them because I couldn't possibly comment on that. But part two is the broader question of negotiating an end to the war in Ukraine. Now, Putin tries to act reasonable. There's a lot of talk about it in other countries. So Putin is saying, yes, we'll negotiate. However, it has to be our terms that prevail at the end of the day. So Putin is doing two things. He's showing or trying to show that he's reasonable to those who want negotiations. But he's saying, well, wait a minute. I'm not making any compromises. What we control now is ours, and we want to have Ukraine subordinate to Russia in the future. And that's simply unacceptable, not only to Zelensky, but also to NATO, the United States, and many of our Western allies. But by saying outrageous things, Putin gets people to accept his outrageous statements as legitimate. So he's very foxy here. By saying we want half of part of Ukraine and he doesn't control all that he wants, people start to thinking about the Russian negotiation position as reasonable, which it absolutely isn't. So Putin is playing games, as he always does on this.
Yeah, a chess game at that. So a little bit of gaslighting then on Putin's part, which he's always done.
Exactly. So, you know, for example, they talk about Donbass and Lugansk and the Russian-speaking eastern part of Ukraine. Russia has annexed it, but the problem is what it claims to annex and have as part of Russia is not even controlled by Russia. So he's trying to box the West in to be taking, assuming that is the start of a negotiation. So it's very clever. And it has sort of worked over the years with the prior round of negotiations called the Minsk agreements, where they did the same thing. So for them, negotiations is not a win-win situation. For them, it's just another strategy to get what Russia wants. And they will lie and they will deceive and they will undermine the West to get what Russia wants. So part of the problem in all of this is just for the West, the U.S., our allies, is we have to think about how Russians negotiate. And it's quite a bit different than the way we think about it. And that's a big diplomatic challenge.
In recent weeks, Russia has made headlines for other reasons as well. Azerbaijani President Ilham Aliyev has accused Moscow of shooting down Azerbaijan Airlines Flight 8243 on accident. The airline shared that there were 67 people on board the plane at the time it went down. That included 62 passengers and 5 crew members. Although 29 people did survive the crash, 38 died. We can say with complete clarity that the plane was shot down by Russia. We're not saying that it was done intentionally, but it was done, said the Azerbaijan president. To discuss more about what happened, Beth Noble, professor of journalism at Fordham University and a former CBS News Moscow bureau chief, joined Odyssey.
What do we learn here or not learn from Putin's comments, and what does this really tell us more broadly?
Saying that he admitted that something was going on over Russian territory, but he stopped short of saying, oh yeah, it was that activity that was our fault that brought this plane down. And I think it must be pretty embarrassing for him, actually, that this plane went down, because it hurt one of his, you know, most stalwart allies, Azerbaijan, as well as Kazakhstan, which is where the plane actually went down, which is another nearby country, which is really stuck by Putin and stuck by Russia through that war with Ukraine.
Yeah, they definitely do not look good right now with their allies questioning them. And even what we're reading is that they're now delaying flights going into many cities in Russia, correct?
Yeah, if I were Azerbaijan Airlines or pretty much any other airline flying into that region, I would just stay the heck out of that area. The Ukrainians have been much more aggressive in recent weeks in lobbing missiles and sending drones into southern Russia, as if they're trying to get the best position that they can before President-elect Trump takes office on January 20th, because the Ukrainians don't know what's going to happen. They don't know how much American support they're going to keep getting. And so they're trying to kind of get what they can in Russia. And so the Russians have had to be pretty aggressive in holding off those Ukrainian attacks. And it looks like on Wednesday, maybe they were a little bit too aggressive and took down a passenger jet by accident.
Now, I'm really curious about the GPS systems being affected, that electronic jamming that's been ongoing. Now, we know with Finland, we know with Poland, and obviously with Ukraine, that Russia has been, you know, messing with their partners, and now it's affected them on their own homeland and with their allies.
Yeah, I mean, the whole southern flank of Russia is now definitely in play in terms of an area that Ukraine is going to hit. But let's remember, Ukraine has hit targets in Moscow and other places that are hundreds and hundreds of miles from the Russian-Ukrainian border. And so I think this is a warning sign to everybody in the area to be really careful that, you know, Russian has air defense, that it has jamming capability, and that passenger jets need to stay really, really clear of the whole area.
Now, what should we expect when Donald Trump comes into the White House again next month?
Well, I wish I knew. you know, there's been so many mixed signals. It's pretty clear that President-elect Trump would like to see peace in the area. I think a lot of people would like to see it, including the Ukrainians and the Russians. Both of those sides have been ground down by almost 3 years of war. Look at the Russian side. They have actually imported North Korean soldiers to fight on their side. And on their side, the Ukrainians are having trouble coming up with enough men to keep fighting. So I think both sides really would like to see this end, but how do we get to a deal? Unclear. President-elect Trump said he could end this war in one day. I'm pretty skeptical of that. But if he could get some peace talks going, I think that would actually be a very helpful thing.
With Trump now set to return to office, several of the proverbial checks he wrote to his supporters on the campaign trail are still yet to be cashed. What we're talking about is mass deportations, tariffs, tax cuts, plus stopping the wars in Ukraine and in Gaza, something he once said he would do on day one. Now he admits that those goals could be a bit more challenging than he thought. But they're all still on the agenda. Domestically, Trump has also vowed to fix the economy, secure the southern border, increase domestic oil production, to end wokeness, and more. That seemingly doesn't leave too much time to settle the dispute between Russia and Ukraine. Rebecca Koffler, a strategic military intelligence analyst, told Fox on January 6th that coming to an agreement with Putin, even for, quote, such a strong negotiator as Trump, will likely be nearly impossible. She added that Putin feels confident that he could keep going until Ukraine capitulates or until a deal is made on Russia's terms. Although, at a presser this week, Putin added that he is ready to speak with Trump at any time if he wants it, which sounds like it's time to talk about new deals. But only time will tell if the author of The Art of the Deal can power his way to a solution. This show is produced by Joe Heady, Christy Strouser, and by me. I'm Lauren Berry, and I want to say thanks for listening to On Deadline, Odyssey's serving of a top news story just for you. Subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts to stay informed.